As someone said, my translator said to me, she was happy that Brazil actually lost the World Cup because it's an election year, and now people actually might concentrate on things that matter instead of gloating about success. There's extreme poverty. There's a huge gap between rich and poor. There's some incredibly palatial mansions, and some of them are just near the perimeter of the slums or favelas there. People living, it's barely beyond cardboard, some of the walls, really living in terrible situations, no school, no way out. And not everyone in the favelas is a criminal, of course, but that, you know, you can see how it breeds there and sort of takes hold. And the criminal organisations actually provide, as many do throughout the world, provide help to their people, the poor, that the government doesn't.
Tell us about the capabilities or the capacities of this prison network, First Command of the Capital, or the PCC, in Brazil's jails.
Well, the PCC are incredible, actually. They formed in 92 in response to a really violent massacre where the police killed hundreds of prisoners when they were sort of having an altercation. And since then, they've grown into quite a huge network of drugs trafficking and gun smuggling throughout South America. No one really knows how they're made up. It's kind of probably cells. But as far as being able to organise things from prison, they do fairly well. They've got mobile phones in prison, they have guns smuggled to them in prison, and it's remarkable because the same people, obviously corrupt prison guards who are letting these things in, are the people that often get killed when things go wrong. But as was shown in May, gangs inside the prison could organise the killing of 43 law enforcement officers on the streets outside from their cells. So it's really outrageous. But you're in a bit of a bind because the prisons, they're sort of, a lot of them are communal prisons. They're incredibly overcrowded. They're horrible conditions. But it seems the Brazilian government can't afford to build proper prisons where the prisoners would have better conditions, and this kind of distress and unhappiness with their situation wouldn't sort of come about. But so it's this bit of a catch-22.
What was it about May 2006 which ignited all of these killings?
Well, the government has built a couple of maximum security prisons where they can isolate people. I think they can only isolate a couple of hundred. And they were doing a transfer of the sort of top echelon of the leaders of the PCC to actually break up the gang and the communication between the gang as much as possible. The government was having a secret meeting about this plan to relocate them, and the guy, the technician, the audio technician who recorded that meeting, sold the tape of that meeting to the lawyers of the imprisoned gang leaders, who then obviously gave it to the gang leaders in prison. So they found out about this secret plan to move them, didn't like it for various reasons, and then with their mobile phones called for the killing of policemen on the street. So it was a transfer. And, you know, again, prison conditions, they say if they were kept in these maximum security prisons, they'd be tortured more, they might be in solitary for days or weeks on end, and they obviously didn't want to move, they're afraid of it.
What were some of the range of attacks on police?
Well, a lot of them were just drive-by shootings. It seemed quite random of police bases. Some of them were police off-duty, some in their homes. You can wonder, maybe it was gang members sort of seeking retribution for previous sort of arrests or whatever, and others were just random. People on the outside who owed them money or had bad drug debts with them and said, all right, you can write off your debt by killing someone, by killing a policeman. So some say that's how they actually organised to get so many sort of foot soldiers out there.
What was the official response from police and government?
Initially it seemed the government was a bit frozen dead, and their first response was to try and block the phone signals in the prisons. So it was a pretty impotent response, really. The police themselves were obviously being targeted, obviously under threat, panicking, very afraid, and it seems they went out and killed people rather than arresting them. That's the impression many had from their reaction at the time. Hundreds were killed in the following 5 days.
Which is what you investigate, this re-emergence of death squads. How was this directly related to the overall police response, and what was some of the things that you found?
Well, there were, of the around 400 people killed, about 69 to 74 of them were killings by death squads, masked men in unmarked cars who come along and shoot people, and 90% of those killed by death squads were innocent. They weren't gang members. They had no criminal records. They were, you know, poor, black, young people in the favelas. So a lot of people think that it was just sheer bloodlust, sheer, you know, want of revenge from police to go out and kill people.
Is there any way out at all through government and official channels?
That's something to sort of wait and see. There's a presidential election in October in Brazil. They'll probably all talk about how they're really going to crack down on crime and never negotiate with the criminals in the prisons and not stand for this kind of thing.
But you spoke to a presidential candidate who didn't seem to want to broach the subject?
No, Geraldo Alckmin, he's Lula, who's the current president's main rival. He was the governor for 6 years before the violence broke out and retired just a month before the violence broke out, so he was pretty responsible for it, but was very much on his campaigning for president and didn't want to talk about state issues. So no one's really saying anything, no one's really talking about it, and people have a short memory for things like this, I think, in Brazil, because it does happen every few years, and this is the worst in a long time, but the shock is over.